Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to our latest podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. And Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the whole of the private rented sector. In this episode, we're going to discuss one of my absolute favourite subjects, pets. A favourite of many people across the nation, but less so, it seems, when talking about pets in Letts. Not only am I a massive animal lover, I consider myself really lucky to have many pets at home. And even when I rented a home, I was fortunate enough that my landlord at the time allowed me to keep my animals. And on reflection, I don't know what I would have done if they actually hadn't allowed it. Thinking back, I probably did choose a property that was a bit less desirable or run down even, actually, to make sure that they were accepted. But is that really right? And in part, it's probably because of my love of animals that I'm incredibly proud that the Lettings Hub kind of have really campaigned for a change in the legislation that allows pets in property. We've held many forums with some fantastic industry experts over the last couple of years, and we've tried to understand how landlords can have all the protection they need to make sure that they feel safe and don't feel exposed when letting to pets. We also attended and have contributed to some parliamentary debate on the subject and have very much tried to advocate a way forward for this challenge that exists at the moment, with hardly any pets being able to be let into property. So let's get started. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Jen, who's from Advocats, and also Ben from Battersea Dogs and Cats Home. So let's just give an introduction to you both. And Jen, maybe let's start with you. Just give us a couple of lines on exactly what are Advocats and how have they been involved with the Pets in Letts campaign since the beginning?
Yes, Advocats started in 2018. We're a wholly voluntary non-profit organisation. And initially, we were just looking to help landlords and tenants in the local area. We're based in the East Midlands, and looking at ways at which a tenant could demonstrate that they were a responsible pet owner to a landlord, or a landlord could ask us to check out a tenant. And it's all the same sort of process of a tenant check, a pet CV, a vet reference, all that kind of information that helps a landlord make an informed choice. And then in September 2021, we launched our Heads for Tails campaign, which called for a change in the law, a change to the Tenant Fees Act, to make it easier and fairer for both parties when it comes to the subject of renting with a pet. And that amendment was put into the Renters Reform Bill currently going through Parliament.
Excellent. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later, because it's obviously topical at the moment in terms of as it's moving through the stages. But let me kind of welcome Ben. Ben, how long have you been involved with Battersea?
So I joined Battersea in 2019, and our involvement in this area is really driven by the fact that one in 10 of the animals that come through our gates is as a result of challenges relating to housing. So it's the second most common reason that animals are relinquished to us. And obviously we wanted to investigate why that was the case and what we could do to help out. So in 2018, we launched our Pet Friendly Properties campaign, which looked first at this issue in the social housing context. And then a couple of years later, on the back of some success with that, we obviously unfortunately had the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of people, a surge in demand of people wanting pet dogs and cats for the first time. And that really shone a spotlight on the challenge in the private rented sector as well. So we revisited the campaign, refreshed it with a new campaign report in 2022. And have looked to kick on from there, really, and obviously now work to influence the Renters Reform Bill, as Jen has alluded to.
So we all know that it's a really hot market at the moment, lettings, and there's a lot of tenants to every property. How do we strike the right balance between landlords, tenants and pets and agents? Because they've obviously got to manage the process if they're acting as the managing agent. And how do we think, really, Pets in Letts should ideally work in our industry?
I think, and it is very difficult in a hot rental market, but I do think that the individual case needs to be looked at. Now, Advocats can't help everyone in the country, but there is a lot that tenants can do to help themselves. And there's various resources on Battersea's website, on our website, Cats Protection, Dogs Trust. There's various resources that people can go to and download templates for CVs, for vet references, for all that sort of thing, and get some help and guidance and tips. So I think realistically, the onus is going to be on the tenant to do as much as they can to demonstrate that they're a responsible pet owner with as much documentation as they can, effectively doing their own pet referencing.
And obviously the government are citing that insurance can be purchased to protect the landlord, because like when we do referencing on a tenant, it's a snapshot in time at that point in time, and we obviously obtain a huge amount of information about their history to try and predict the future. It might not be possible to do that with a pet, because it might be that they're getting the pet for the first time and therefore there isn't necessarily the history. What's your view of insurance and how that can be used in this sector before I obviously come to Ben and get his view?
I think insurance is absolutely the answer to meeting a landlord's concerns about pets in their properties after the Tenant Fees Act capped the amount of deposit that they were allowed to take. As the law currently stands, a landlord can't ask a tenant to take out the insurance because it's not a permitted payment. That's what's going through on the pet side of the Renters Reform Bill. But there's nothing to stop a tenant offering that insurance. And there are companies out there that are providing very good value for money products at the moment. And as I think the legislation gets closer and closer, I think there's going to be more products coming through to the marketplace, making choice better.
So I think with the Pet Friendly Properties campaign from Battersea's perspective, we've always been really keen and really clear to make sure that it's a collaborative campaign. So we're not just working from a tenant perspective. We want the landlord voice as part of that, and to help steer the campaign too. It's always been about finding collaborative solutions that work for both sides, because nobody benefits if we fall back into a kind of adversarial landlord versus tenant situation on this agenda. And of course, many landlords themselves are pet owners, animal lovers, and are as invested in finding solutions in this issue as anyone else, which I think is important to remember sometimes. On the insurance point, I think Battersea's research has also indicated that's a solution behind which most landlords and tenants seem to find agreement. So we are also supportive of exploring that route. It won't surprise you that Battersea's remit means that my expertise on the insurance market falls far short of both of yours. But I think we're really keen to explore the role of insurance moving forwards, especially with the Renters Reform Bill progressing. As Jen says, we need to explore that market, bring new products to that market and make it, you know, a competitive insurance market that will also help ensure that products are affordable for tenants, because that's going to be another key factor here. We've talked about the context of the pressures on the housing system. Cost of living is obviously huge pressure on a lot of people at the moment as well. So it will absolutely be key to make sure that, you know, insurance products, when they are brought to market, are affordable for tenants in this space too.
So what are we actually seeing in rehoming centres at the minute? Because you mentioned cost of living, and that's got to be a massive, significant kind of effect, really. It's got to have an effect, on, you know, people having to surrender pets. What are we at capacity? How is it looking? Because one of the interesting things from when we've surveyed tenants in the past, I think it was over 50% of tenants that wanted a pet would definitely want to look to a rehoming centre to find one. They didn't necessarily want a puppy or, you know, to go and buy one. They actually wanted to go and rehome, which would obviously be a massive shift in the amount of pets that we have, without a home at the minute in the UK.
So I think, unsurprisingly, we are seeing an increasing number of people, unfortunately, taking the decision, the really heartbreaking decision, to come to our centres and relinquish an animal due to cost of living. In particular, that's in relation to rising vet bills, but also obviously the rising cost of pet food as well. And just the other week, in fact, I was outside having a meeting with my manager at Battersea, and a lady arrived at the centre taking the decision there and then that she would have to give up the dog that she's had for 10 years, a beloved family pet, due to the rising cost of living and the finances no longer working for her to keep that pet. And obviously we will always be there to take those animals in, but it doesn't make it any less heartbreaking when you see those cases. And I think, going back to your point on capacity, it's kind of an anecdotal reflection at the moment, but we've certainly seen an increase in people coming to our doors facing that cost of living challenge. And I do wonder if, you know, unless something changes on the pets and housing side, that trend will only increase. Because if you've got a cost of living pressure in relation to looking after an animal, and on top of that, you're finding it really difficult to find somewhere to live with that animal, ultimately, people are only going to be pushed one way. And it's one thing people taking that decision to relinquish to a rescue centre like us, which is the responsible thing to do, obviously, in that circumstance. But, you know, God forbid that might see an increase in people abandoning animals elsewhere, away from the care of rescue organisations. So I think it's quite a precarious environment we find ourselves in at the moment. And that's why it makes it even more important to deal with the housing issue, because if you can release that pressure a little bit, you help the pressure on the wider system.
Yeah, and with so many tenants to not so many properties, you know, tenants already feel a little exposed in terms of trying to put their best foot forward. And anything that, you know, might tip the balance from them getting the house to not getting the house, you can see why they're obviously making different decisions. But obviously, from a rehoming centre perspective, you already do quite a lot of due diligence when somebody comes to you to look for to rehome a pet. And to, I guess, make sure that the property that they want to take the pet home to is suitable. So there must be things that we can all learn from you in this space for the industry in terms of using some of the tips and techniques and everything that you've learned over the years to try and make sure that that pet and that pet owner is suitable for the potential let property that's, you know, that they're asking to move into.
Absolutely. When we're looking at our matching service, there's a whole series of complicated algorithms that I will not pretend to understand myself, but our operations colleagues are across that look to match somebody who has applied to us to say they want to take a dog or a cat from us. And obviously that will feed in various things like the environment they're in, whether it's urban or rural, and the suitability for that animal, whether they have children in the household, whether there are existing pets in that household. And things like whether there's outside space obviously remains a big consideration in the case of many animals. I think to your wider point, the challenge there at the moment is always the balance of supply and demand. You know, how many animals do we have in our care versus how many people are coming to us? And I think we'd always been wary on the back of the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic in particular, that we might see a cliff edge where suddenly once people started going back to the office, when things were settling down a bit more, that we'd see a huge surge in relinquishment of animals to our centres. Thankfully, that hasn't happened. But obviously now, as we just talked about, moving into that cost of living crisis situation where that relinquishment rate starts to increase again, all of that feeds into, you know, will we suddenly have a lot of animals in our care? And we are at quite high capacity at the moment. And what does that mean for where we choose to rehome those animals? We always ultimately want to find the best possible home for an animal to go to that will support their welfare needs. And it's just, an ongoing challenge when the environment is, as we've just talked about, so, fragile in the external world at the moment, that we just always have to balance that up.
Yeah, I understand, definitely. It's just heartbreaking, it really is.
Can I stick a hand in the air for local rescues there? Because I see an awful lot of local rescue posts on things like Facebook and Twitter, and they don't have the budgets for complicated algorithms, but they still look to match the pet as best as possible, because all the adverts will say, cannot live with children, good with cats, mustn't live with dogs, okay with children over 11 or what have you. So that care is taken right across the whole rescue spectrum, that the right animal goes to the right home. And I think a little bit at the moment, like you've got landlords having their pick of tenants applying for properties, because there are so many pets in rescue at the moment, it makes it easier to find a good match for a home because there's sadly so much choice.
Yeah, understand. But also the whole problem could be really alleviated if more tenants were allowed pets in a rental home, because as we've seen from the statistics, there's so many people that would want one. And some of those people can absolutely afford them. So they're not very likely to end up back in, and it would really move, I suppose, a market, if that's the right term, that is very fragile, I would say, at the moment. Of course, the Renters Reform Bill was passed now to the committee stage in Parliament recently, having passed its second reading. And it seems that from all the discussion and the opposition and all the questions that were raised, pets are probably the least controversial element of the bill. Have you had a chance to reflect on your thoughts yet?
I think it was quite heartening. I did actually watch some of the debate when it was going through its second reading. And I think it was heartening of how many MPs were standing up for pets and the right for people to keep their furry family with them and how important it was. So I was very heartened by the backing that particular issue seems to have. And as you say, it is pretty much the least contentious part of the bill. So as will hopefully go through with hardly any changes to it.
And I think what we're hoping is it obviously the bill now moves to the next stage. Well, we're hoping for all of the elements of the bill, but for some of it, definitely to kind of move on a little bit quicker than it has done. Because one of the things that got spoken about quite early on is how slow it's been from first to second reading. But when it comes to pets, I think the bit that still confuses me and I can see is going to cause problem is whether the bill relates to new tenancies or existing tenancies in situ and how that really works in practice. Because what we actually could see is people needing to rehome their pets for a very short period of time from when they move into a new home to then asking for permission for a pet to then hopefully having that permission granted to allow that pet back. So that all seems a little bit backwards to me. What's your assessment? And what's kind of been discussed in your world in relation to how the actual detail in the bill sits at the minute?
So I think from a Battersea perspective, I would echo Jen's comments that it was really welcome to see MPs speaking positively about the pets and housing elements of the bill. I think the bill, even as drafted currently, marks a significant step forward for pet owning tenants and is to be welcomed. It is a welcome shift away from that kind of historic no pet clause approach that we've had in the UK for obviously a very long time now. Would also completely echo, Heidi, your concerns around the fact it would apply to existing tenancies and not to prospective tenancies. Because if it doesn't apply to prospective tenancies, you know, what protections have you got if you are a renter, as you say, one of, I think the stat updated the other week, 25 people, was it, going to view any one property for rent in London? I think that stat was in relation to. If you own a pet and the landlord who's looking to rent out their property knows that, what's to stop them shuffling that person to the end of the list just because it's an extra hassle that they don't need to deal with or don't think they want to deal with? So I think it applying to prospective tenancies is something we at Battersea, being honest, would potentially look at committee stage of the bill and see if any MPs were willing to raise that issue there. I think also there are some concerns more broadly about the bill, just in terms of some of the tightening of the details we'd want to see. For example, I think at the moment landlords will be given 42 days to respond to a written pet request and then a further 7 if that decision has to go to a superior landlord. We'd argue that is too long, both practically for renters, but also for rescues like us when it comes to rehoming animals. So can we look at the time limits that are being proposed there as well? And finally, just on that superior landlord's point, you know, if you've got blocks of houses of flats, if you're a renter in one of those, you've got a landlord, a direct landlord, but then there is a manager of the building, a superior landlord above that. At the moment, the way the bill is drafted, I understand superior landlords will maintain that exemption and have the right to overrule a decision on pets. And I think we would need to look at that because that could obviously affect a huge number of people as well. So the bill broadly to be welcomed, but I think there is further work to do to improve it and make sure that it really does work for tenants with pets.
Yeah. And Jen, I know you have real passion about the head lease problem that we're seeing, because that does at the minute seem to be exempt and could rule out a real high number of properties, but also a high number of tenants that then are not allowed a pet.
Yes, and what we've worryingly found is a real, I'm going to say ignorance, but I don't mean that in a nasty way. People haven't heard of a head lease. They don't know what a head lease is. And this is within animal welfare industry, it's within tenant groups. And it worries me on a number of levels. So I'm just going to be quickly boring and recap the difference between the two, if that's all right. So you have a landlord, let's call him Fred. Fred goes and buys a property to rent, and the property he buys is freehold. And what that means is he owns the property and he owns the land it's built on. He's responsible for it and has a high degree of control over it. If Fred chooses to buy a flat or an apartment, usually this tends to be in purpose-built blocks, but not exclusively, the chances are that property is going to be leasehold. And that means he owns the property for a fixed period of time, i.e. the term of the lease. He doesn't own the land that the property is on. Whoever owns the freehold is his landlord. So he can own that property, but he is responsible to a higher landlord, a superior landlord, a head lease. There's a number of different terms for it. If that head lease specifies no pets, there is currently, as far as we can see, nothing that can be done about that. The whole leasehold system is up for reform, and Michael Gove has been talking about that. But I don't believe there's anything imminent or even in the near future happening with that, certainly unlikely to be before the next general election. So the problem I see a number of problems from this, actually. The main problem I see is people, if the bill is passed and becomes law, people will think, yay, I have the right to have a pet. And they get a pet and they ask the landlord, and then, no, there's a head lease. Oh, what's one of those? They didn't know. Also, I think there's a problem that many local rescues need to be educated for what is a head lease, because in some cases a landlord may say, yes, you can have a pet, because he isn't aware that there's a head lease that says no pets. So I think rescues need to be aware of that. Also, rescues will usually assume that if you are a home owner, so not a tenant, a homeowner, then they can adopt to you. But if you're a homeowner of a property with a head lease, then there's a problem. And with the hot rental market, with rents increasing just super scale at the moment, there are beginning to be lots of other different mortgage products coming out that if you can demonstrate that you can afford to pay X amount in rent over a long period of time, you can be considered for a mortgage. What sort of property do people usually get when they first step on the property ladder? A flat. If there's a head lease, I just foresee lots and lots of problems and a massive education needing to be undertaken for everyone within the industry and within rescue about what a head lease is.
Yeah, and I suppose to kind of carry on from there is the visibility of one. How does a tenant get hold of one to actually know? I actually don't know the answer to that myself, whether they're actually given one or given a link to one, or they, you know, they're accessible somewhere or somehow, but they could be totally blind to the clauses listed within it, couldn't they, really?
Yeah.
And they may not necessarily all come into the tenancy agreement. I suppose one of the things for me is one of the things that we spoke about when we held the forums before is one of the things that we're most worried about with the legislation changes, will anything really change at all, in the fact that there are, to Ben's point, so many tenants to every property, and therefore will survival of the fittest, I suppose, kind of come into play in the fact of anybody without any quirks at all may sail through easier than anybody that kind of comes. So we obviously also welcome insurance and, you know, referencing or pet CV or anything which can kind of give assurance to the landlord, because it is tough for the tenant, but it's equally tough for landlords right now in terms of the amount of legislation that's being thrown at them and the amount of costs they also have to incur. And we obviously see some tenants at their worst when we're having to evict them, and we see damage in property, and sometimes it's fairly horrific. So we need to make sure that if we want to keep landlords in our industry, we need to protect them.
One thing that was very interesting that we found when we ran our What's the Damage survey in spring 2022 was 66% of landlords favoured some sort of insurance option as the way forward. Now, we know that there are landlords who stopped allowing pets purely as a result of the Tenant Fees Act and the cap deposits that they were restricted to. If they now, or when the bill becomes law, if they then know that they can get protection, I think that it will open up those landlords and other landlords as well who'd been a bit on the fence to considering tenants with pets. Yes, it's difficult at the moment because, as you say, 25 applications, not viewings, applications per property in London. And I know, I believe the figure is in the high teens in the rest of the country. It's a little bit crazy out there, but there are landlords who would like to consider pets, but only if their interests can be protected. And that is what the insurance option gives them. So I think there is room for a little bit of optimism there.
Yeah, and I think our industry has actually got some tried and tested products now where a tenant buys them, but the landlord benefits if needed yes. at the end. So deposit replacement schemes very much work in that way, where the ultimate beneficiary is the landlord to make sure that property is returned in the state that it was let. And actually, in many cases, give higher protection than a deposit would that's kind of held. We've also got like professional guarantor schemes, I suppose, which is another scenario where it's coming to market where a tenant can buy themselves a guarantor instead of going to kind of rely on mum and dad. But if anything goes wrong and there is a claim because the tenant hasn't paid the rent, then again, the professional guarantor company step in to pay the rent to the landlord. So I think we've got some really good experience now across the industry of how these schemes could work. And it's not hard to create them. We need to make sure that it's seen as a policy of last resort to keep the premium down. We need to understand how it's going to be rated in the industry, because one cat could be quite different to 10 dogs. And where does the line get drawn in terms of what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable? And what happens if that tenant's circumstances change? So they may buy a policy initially when they move in, and sadly that pet could die. And therefore, what then happens? You know, how does that property get checked for damage mid-tenancy potentially? Or does the tenant then have to carry on paying a premium for something that isn't really there? There's lots of intricacies with it that need working through, but we're very much kind of working through them at the moment. And you know, there's definitely going to be a landing place, which is going to be great for everybody, I'm sure. Before insurance obviously comes into law, and it's a bit tricky at the moment because, Jen, to your point earlier, you're right, a tenant could go and buy it now if they wanted to, but obviously a landlord can't insist on it, and therefore a landlord may not benefit from it because a tenant could cancel it or not make the claim. And until the Tenant Fees Act gets changed and it becomes a permitted payment, it's slightly difficult ground. And we know from when we ran our survey before, the reality of what's happening in the industry at the moment is tenants are taking pets into the property without permission, which kind of puts that landlords at a greater risk, really, than having some form of insurance. I don't know, Ben, if Battersea have kind of been hearing the true extent of that and what's actually really going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, currently there are we've done some research alongside Mars Pet Care, who are also very invested in this agenda. And their evidence has showed that 1 in 10 renters are currently smuggling a pet into a rented property without the knowledge of the landlord. And obviously that's no good for anyone. It's not good for the trust of the landlord. It's not good for the mental health of the tenant, because they're constantly worried that that pet is going to be discovered and the consequences of that. And obviously it's fundamentally not good for the welfare of the animal itself if it has to be hidden away, if the landlord is around visiting or you know, things are being done to the property. So it just serves to underline, I think, the currency of this issue. I think also, interestingly, it's 1 in 10 of current tenants have admitted to smuggling in a pet. But the stat is also 25% of people have admitted at some point to having smuggled a pet into a tenancy, into a rented property, sorry. And so I think we can imagine the 1 in 10 stat might actually be higher if people felt more confident in admitting to what was going on. So it just all serves to underline that this is a really live issue and something that we do need to tackle as soon as we can, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got a real life example. I ended up with my rescue dog Paddington a year ago for exactly that reason. The girl, she was only 18. She had two dogs. She needed to give them up because she'd got a baby and she was moving into her first rented home. And she knew, as a big Labrador, he's huge. she wasn't going to be able to get him in, but she also had a really small dog and she was totally willing to take the risk. So that dog still lives with her to this day in a property that isn't allowed a dog, but the big dog, because she couldn't smuggle him in, obviously I'm lucky enough to have him, but it was fairly heartbreaking, you know, that that had to happen. So thank you both very much for your contribution today. It's actually a really topical subject right now, but it's also really sad, actually, when you think about it, in terms of how many pets are currently out there in local rescue centres, national rescue centres, that really could be with their new owner. So a big thank you to you, Ben, and to you, Jen. And before you go, we like to ask all of our guests whether they have any funny story. And obviously pets always kind of bring about humour. So maybe you could start, Jen, by giving us a little bit of lightheartedness to end the discussion today.
Okay. Best I could come up with is a story I heard through the What's the Damage survey that I alluded to earlier. Now, most people think of pets, dogs, cats, bunnies, gerbils, guinea pigs, that sort of thing, birds. And then people will say, well, honestly, surely they couldn't have a problem with a fish. One of the responses we got on What's the Damage from a landlord was one who had allowed his tenant to have tropical fish tank. And there was some sort of occurrence with, I think it was a bicycle or something that was lent against it. And basically the tropical fish tank was knocked over. So you've got massive amount of water, fish flapping about all over the place, and quite a bit of damage, which, no, it isn't funny, but yeah, it kind of is.
Did they catch
even
the fish?
Fish can cause problems.
Did they catch the fish, Jen? That's all we probably need to know. Do we know?
The landlord didn't go into that detail, unfortunately. I can't say that no fish were harmed in the telling of this story.
Okay. And how about you, Ben?
Just reflecting on the animals being smuggled into properties point, I think it's really interesting, and I'm sure both of you will have had the same experience, that when you talk to other people about this issue, suddenly people will come forward with stories of either themselves or conveniently a friend of a friend has been smuggling an animal in their property. And just hearing some of the stories of, you know, cats being encouraged to stay in one room, shall we say, or a smaller space while a landlord pays an unexpected visit, have been interesting to hear the least. You know, cats scratching at doors and trying to cover up for reasons for the noise as the landlord is investigating. So again, I think just serves to underline that these things are really much more common than we might think, and hence the importance of us continuing to push forwards on the pets and housing agenda.
Absolutely. Thank you both very much for your time today. It's been really lovely to chat to you again, and hopefully we'll get to meet in person as we kind of do our next pet forum early in 2024. To ensure that you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast, and please leave us a review if you like what you hear. Thank you very much for listening.
This is an original podcast brought to you by the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech.